Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Beach Lifestyle Radio Show on the Simply G Radio Network. Again, go to simplyg.com to check out more information on G.J. Reynolds, the Playful and Powerful Warrior, or you can go to my website, totaltutor.net. Twitter, Total Tutor Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. And I'm so excited first to introduce my co-host, G.J. Reynolds, because we have a big-time guest today, don't we, G.J.?
Very much so, Neil, and I'm excited to be interviewing him. And when I say his name, everybody will know exactly who he is. And he's definitely the epitome of anti-aging, and he's aged very well, and he's been known to be in many, many movies and television shows. And I was actually just watching Doc Hollywood, and I saw him playing the doctor out in Hollywood, in Beverly Hills. So you probably remember that role. But, you know, without further ado, he's done a lot of great things, and he's one heck of a person. And please welcome to the show, George Hamilton. How are you doing, George?
I'm all right. I mean, I like the idea that I've aged well. I really know what that's like. So like being in Benihana's or Ruth Chris Steakhouse, don't you think? He's aged well.
Well, G.J. has aged well as well, and we'll see where G. is going to be at your age, George. G.J. is 32 with 20 years experience, right, G.J.? And he's in the best shape of his life, so he sees how important looking great, especially the part, and he shares his time in L.A. So, George, you know that drill. You gotta look the part in L.A., don't you?
Well, I guess so, but, you know, I've always felt the one thing that I have that I've used as my secret weapon is that I didn't think I was the best actor, and I may not be the one to get the job, but if I live long enough, I may win by default.
Yeah, well, you'll have the opportunities at every different acting gig possible. You know, you've played from a young guy all the way to up to a senior citizen. So
industry. If you just keep in the game.
Exactly, and stay the course that G.J. says in his book all the time. Well, first of all, question, George, did you always want to be an actor? I mean, we're going really way back, but that question, has this been always the entertainment field's what you wanted to be in?
No, I didn't want to be an actor. I didn't have any desire to be an actor, but my whole family did. And I kind of saw that was the prize they wanted in the family, and I thought, well, it must be important if they want it. And then when I got to high school, I just took a class in theater arts because it seemed easier than doing math. And I went to the state capital in Florida where I was going to school at the time, and I competed and won the competition. So next year I thought, well, I have one more subject before I get out of school to have to learn because I was one credit behind. I thought, I'll just go out to California and get that out of my system, then come back, go to school. Well, I came out and I got into movies, and I didn't have any idea what I was doing, but I never went back to school, and I never had to take math again.
And it's very interesting, as I'll tell G.J. about this, a lot of ways that a lot of actors I've interviewed, a lot of athletes I've interviewed, G.J., that play at a high level, they perform at a high level, G., they end up not wanting to do this when they're kids. Isn't that interesting, G.?
Well, I was thinking the exact same thing. A lot of them, they get into it because they see it as an easier path, and like you said, versus physical work or some subject in school. And then there's also because a lot of the actresses were ladies, and they were saying, hey, if that's where the girls are going to be, that's where I'm going to go. So I've seen that.
Well, I think that works for a little while. You know, that works for your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. But when you get up into the 70s, you really have to like this game because it's a hard game. And I think that's the way it is in anybody's work. I think the trick is to love what you do. And then you'll do anything for it. You know, you'll stay up as late as you have to do. You get up as early as you have to. Whatever it needs. I didn't really want to do any of it. I just didn't want to embarrass myself, and I was working with pretty good people. And I was in all the people I was with. Robert Mitchum, I mean, I never knew when he was asleep or awake. I just knew the words were coming at him, And sometimes he'd say, I know the words, but I'm just too drunk to say them. So I just loved being in this business. It was, you met the most incredible people, and it was never dull. And it was like you said about flying, it's hours of boredom interrupted by moments of sheer panic. Getting ready for it and getting your wardrobe and your makeup and blah, blah, blah. All that stuff is kind of boring when you do that a few thousand times. But the actual climbing in the saddle and going for it, another game.
Quite interesting, and I think that that's so important in a lot of ways. When did you know this was going to be your career? Right after that big award that you saw, and then you moved to Hollywood, is that when you said, hey, I don't have to go back to school again? I'm going to just stick to this?
You know, it's like you get in the plane, and you start flying, and then you look down, and you're past the point of no return. That's what you know. That's what you do. Because if you don't, that's all you do. You got to make a decision real quick. After you've spent your bullet there, what you gonna do? And I started out with, well, what's the big deal here? And then I had a backpack, and I thought the worst they can do is fire me, and I go home. And every time I thought I was gonna go home, there'd be another picture or another location or somewhere. And the years just went on by, and I thought, boy, this is like a never-ending, you know, holiday. But the problem is, you have to have the temperament to not know where your next job is coming from. If you have that, if you have a homeless attitude, you can do very well, because you're not trying to get anybody to commit to anything. You're just trying to commit to the lines yourself. That's about it. And I just found it. I looked down, and I looked at the speedometer, and I thought, damn, I've spent 30 years at this now at that time. And I have, now it's over 50-something, maybe close to 60. I can't believe it. And it's... people don't have any idea until they're in whatever it is they're in that that's all they're going to do. They better be damn good at it. You better take a night course or whatever you do in the day, because you're going to be doing it for a long time. If you hate it, well, that's just the worst way to go. And, you know, guys like Jack Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, I mean, he didn't want to be president. He wasn't thinking of that. He was probably thinking about girls or something, but his brother was supposed to be president. Sometimes it's the easier ride. The guy with the smile on his face and looks up and says, well, doesn't everyone? It's a kind of, it's one thing to be totally dedicated to what you do and keep your, you know, foot down and going for it. But there's a light touch to success. And that is, I can take it or I can leave it. It isn't going to break me. It isn't going to make me. It's just fun. And this is what I do. You attract in life very much what you give out. And if you want something, you pretty well have to almost have the attitude you've got it already. Now, that's kind of a strange thing to say, but I've often needed something, and it would be the last thing I'd indicate to whomever I was going to get it from.
What do you think of that, G? What did George just said?
Well, George has said a lot of great things, and, you know, being an entrepreneur, I love each of those messages that you just said, you know, and one that, backing up a little bit, is, you know, having that homeless mindset. And one of the things that I've always thought of is, okay, what's the worst case here? Okay, here's where I was before I started. Well, here's where I'm at. What's the worst case? Okay, go back to where I started. And it sounds like that's, you know, a great, you know, great way of living life, whether you're acting or in business. And you've been able to do that. And I spent a lot of time in L.A. and Hollywood and got some acting friends and musicians. And you definitely have to have a special temperament to stay the course. And you've done a great job doing that. And I know you've played a lot of roles, and a lot of them come to mind. You know, and when I was looking at all the roles that you played, I was just like, yeah, I remember that one. I remember that one. I remember that one. So do you have a favorite role that you actually played, you know, in all the years that you've been in Hollywood?
Well, the thing is that I got kind of typecast right away. I was this guy that thought, you know, like, you know, yachts and good-looking girls, and I don't know how they got that attitude, but they did. And so I kind of played into that. I thought, well, why not? And it's a pretty easy habit to support. I didn't want any drugs. I just wanted cars and girls. So they were happy to allow me to do that in movies and write scripts for it and what have you. But I it wasn't enough. And I started trying to do things that were beyond my scope, you know. I played as Faye Theater in a movie, and then next thing I knew, I was playing Evel Knievel, and then Hank Williams and Moss Hart and Zorro and Dracula. I mean, I think most people think, you know, that I'm kind of one-dimensional, but I don't think they really put all those people together. If anything, I've got a lot of split personalities, but I'm not one-dimensional. I just play a one-dimensional character when I play me, because I took me out one day. I just went upstairs and saw the wardrobe department in the gym and thought, God, that suit's good-looking. This one, that's Cary Grant's suit. I said, oh, wow. And then I felt the suit and looked at it, and I said, that's the suit I want, because it makes you look important. It makes you look good. And the minute I got the suit on, I had the tip. And the minute I had the tip, I'd charge more money, and the studio paid me more. It's just the way life goes. So whatever it is you want, go for it, because life will support your habit. It's ready to do it. You've got to be able to want to believe in yourself and believe you can do it. You can't back off and say, oh, I don't know, because it goes by too fast. You know, just ride that wave and see where it goes.
Completely agree, George. I think that since I been in the entertainment field versus a professional wrestler, now back in radio, you got to ride that ride. And where you see you're going to end up, no one knows. And 4 years I'll be in radio, George, in December, and I started out just education. Never thought I'd get to talk to people like you. And I've learned the craft from interviewing so many different people. And I just think that at one point I saw that I am a brand, that I am somebody that provides great information for great guests and to interview them in different ways. When did you know that you were a brand, and how did it evolve over time, especially to where you are today?
Well, knowing when you're a brand is when people see it en masse, and television gets that to you faster, because if you have a little some idiosyncrasy about you, something about you that can be mimicked or people can copy, you become, and you do that in television, but television was not what I was doing. I was doing it in movies, and I was moving around in movies. So for a long time, the only thing I was thought of is, well, I know he's on the beach, and he's in that picture where the boys are, and he's got a tan, and that's just what they got me for. So I was starting to become a brand of those kind of, you know, kid movies in those days that were Spring Vacation. But that all changes, and you change your brand several times in your life, or if you don't get out of the rut, you just keep making more of it. But they really need something. You need something that people can peg you with. It's a world where there's so much competition. It's not bad to be pegged with that, but you got to have the goods when you get the job to go beyond that. And I think a lot of people figure, okay, I'm a failure. Well, failure is one of the best things in the world, because it's the only time you get a lesson. You don't get lessons from success. You get lessons from failure. And the more failures you have, it gives you a track of what to do and what not to do. And how. And depending on how determined you are to be successful, you'll get at it again. And when you do, you won't fail that next time. It's just the way life is. And for me, I've been upside down, out and in and over and under. And it's made me laugh that people look at it as a failure. I mean, it's a failure if you don't co-create your success. You have to get out of bed first. You have to go and do something. It doesn't matter even if it's wrong, but do something. Don't sit there and hope that it comes to you. You attract it by the energy you put out. And that's just the way it is. And I think anybody who's been an alcoholic or a drug addict will know that one. I haven't been, but I've known a lot of them. And they all realize that they just got to put that one foot in front of the other. Even when you think you're down and out, it's all over, you cannot imagine how the deal of those cards can change you in a second. I've waited many times thinking, give me a sign, any kind of sign, except loser. I just don't want that sign. Give me any sign that I'm going to pull out of. And all of a sudden, bam, I pulled to an inside straight. And it's amazing. I'm overwhelmed by how great life is and how you should not have any sense of failure or any sense of fear about it, because it is all good for you. And we learn by it. Even the worst of things make us into people we would never know.
It's amazing, GJ, how much George reminds me of you. And GJ has a lot of your qualities as an entrepreneur. he sees his brand in his certain ways. He never gives up, always stays the course. He's had his ups and downs to the success he's been able to attain as well, GJ, isn't that correct?
Well, yes, and I was just thinking about exactly everything George is saying. I said I'm in so much alignment, and, you know, I look at every failure as definitely what you just said, a lesson to learn from. And the only time I see anybody actually truly fails is if they never choose to get up. And obviously, yeah, and through life, you know, we're always going to have different ups and downs, and it's what you do when you're down. And I look at the hardest times of my life and probably the worst times of my life, and times I definitely, I'm glad that they're behind me, have been the catalyst of what's turned out to be the next best thing for me and the next best learning experience. And I've been able to draw upon that. And then, you know, a lot of times I see people who are struggling that, you know, they feel like they're the only one in the world that's at that point. And I see when somebody shares those tough times and are vulnerable and sharing that, how much of a catalyst that can be to help other people. And that's sort of what I've done. And I always see that event. Go ahead.
That's right. No, you finish, please.
Well, you're the star of the show.
Well, it doesn't matter. I can come back.
And we look forward to that.
But here's the thing. The thing is, I just, I think that little roommate we have in our heads, whoever that guy is that lives up in our heads and says you can't make it, this is going to be bad, or you shouldn't do that, that's the real enemy, because that's the guy that we invent or co-invent so many stupid things that we think are going to happen to us that never happen to us. And you get to a point where you feel like, oh, God, I don't know if I can get through this. Get through what? Nothing's happened. It's all in your mind. So many people come out with a negative way of looking at life or fear of something bad's going to happen, albeit maybe from their childhood or other things. That's what you got to stop doing. You got to shut that guy down and say, yes, we can, and I'm going to do it, and I'll get it done. Because just with that attitude and that shift, all the tools you need come along.
George, I can see why you stayed the course. That's why you're still acting and you're still working more than some kids that are 18 years old. So when we get back, we're going to find out the latest projects of George Hamilton. Again, we could talk to him for hours and we only get two segments with him, but we hope to have him back on another time to promote something else. But you're listening to the Beach Lifestyle Radio Show on the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Beach Lifestyle Radio Show on the Simply G Media Network. Again, you can go to simplyg.com, that's simplyg.com, and check out all the information on GJ Reynolds, the Playful and Powerful Warrior. You can purchase his book and learn about all the cool things he's doing. And we're with celebrity George Hamilton. And I'm just telling you, George, I would have an interview alone just talking about your next roles and all your cool things that are going on. But it was very interesting what G said off air that G should share for our audience out there, because ultimately what you're able to share today, George, is something that GJ hears all the time, don't you, G, from one of your mentors?
Right. Well, as I was sharing off air, you know, Coach Dale Brown has shared with me many times, you know, a lot of the things that George is sharing here, and it's just refreshing to hear the life's messages and the messages that George has shared today, and there's been a handful of them, are applicable in one's life, regardless of what your career is, what your endeavor is, or what your education is, and where you're at in life. And, you know, so George, it's just been refreshing, and I'm glad I got a bunch of goosebumps today, and it's been a very enjoyable interview. So, you know, let's get back to, you know, some of the things that you're doing, and, you know, and you got free reign to elaborate as much as you want. You know, obviously, you're still working and doing some great things, and we know you just filmed a CVS commercial, and, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about that, and when's that going to air, and where people can find information about it?
CVS commercial's on air now with Nick Cunney and Joan Rivers and I, and I just finished two movies, which are, one is I play a fellow who has Alzheimer's and thinks he's Dean Martin. It's just a wonderful, wonderful role. And it's fun, and it's not it's sad, but not sad. It's you get a laugh with it, and you get a chill with it. So then I played a corrupt senator with Treat Williams in another movie that just finished, and I'm doing two different documentaries. Two movies. One was called Blue Skies, and the other one's called Catatunk. And why they call it Catatunk Blues, I don't know, just to make it difficult. But the two documentaries, I'm doing one about Sean Flynn, who was Errol Flynn's son, who disappeared in Vietnam years ago, and who was a combat photographer. And the other is about Evel Knievel. And I made the movie about Evel, produced it, and played Evel. And this is a documentary about Evel Knievel. So that's what keeps me busy. And I'm working on a major TV show, which I'll know in maybe 3-4 days whether I'll be on TV next year. And if I am, I'll be on a series, and it'll be a very interesting role. The thing about all of that is that I worked for things, and then I let them go. And I let them tell me what's best and in the order they should come to me, not because I think they should be. Because, again, going back to the universe, it knows it's here to support us. You didn't put a tree here and expect it to change place to live, and it's got all the nutrients and things it needs. You have everything in nature to support nature. The problem is we keep ruining it and messing it up. So I started realizing that most of the diseases, you asked me earlier, what did I want to do when I started out, or did I always want to be an actor? No, I wanted to be a doctor. My whole family were doctors. But when I started to realize that medicine was getting handicapped by education because they were really not allowing them to know more than what was in those few books that they had, and that we are really divinely supported. And I say divinely because there's got to be a power bigger than us. Otherwise, all this, they said, we would have been born with doctors as our twins, we would have been ourselves doctors, but we wouldn't have had to have doctors. And the doctors now are thinking perhaps that what they learned in school is going to get us healthy. No, most of the time it helps, but most of the times it's toxic. What we have in our food supply today is just disastrous. What we don't have is even worse. So what we get is no nutrition. We get what we get micronutrients from carbohydrates and proteins and such, fats, but we don't get what we really need, which are micronutrients. Those are the things that are alive, and those are the things that curb your appetite and feed what it is you essentially need. Instead, we're always hungry, and yet we're undernourished. That's America's, about 85% of people now are overweight. And that's just a disaster because our food is dead food. And going back in history, it wasn't like that. Cancer has gone up and up and up and up every year, not going down, and heart disease is right behind it, and diseases that are caused by medical mishaps are right behind that. So I thought, okay, what do you do? What do you honestly do in your life to make this right for you and your children? And I looked around and thought, well, let's just control what I put in my mind, the way I think, and then let's control what I put in my mouth as what I eat. And that's why I eat organically. I eat food that I know is been raised properly, hasn't got pesticides on it, it hasn't been hormoned to death. And I know that the things that I drink out of don't have plastics in them. We're just full of all this stuff. And our day of reckoning is coming, as in our economy. And it's in our generations. My little boy goes to military school, and his fervent desire is to be president of the United States. And I said, why in the world do you want to do that? He said, Dad, I really want to change things. Well, we've given our children something to change. So for me, I'm now trying to give him part of the tools that he'll need to be whatever it is he wants to be, besides top of his class in school right now. And last year, I got involved with two people who were a mom and not a mom and pop, but a mom and son combination, Budge and Linda Collinson, who have a small company, and which America was made on. And they have a product which is just called Drink Life Infusion, and it's It's Drink Youth Infusion, Y-U-T-H. D-R-I-N-K, drinkyouthinfusion.com. And I started realizing what they had in their product was the basis of what we all needed, just the micronutrients, the basis of what we needed. And you can't get it in food anymore. Our topsoil is completely spent. We don't rotate the crops much. Corn's completely gone. We have so much corn syrup and sugar in our food. I mean, there's one little product, which is Youth Infusion. You just take this powder with all the vitamins, essential minerals you need, and you put it in a glass of water, and it tastes like a glass of orange juice, and you got it. And it's a couple of them a day, and I give them to my children, and I take it. So for me, that's one thing I'm pushing as far as the giving back side of nutrition in life. Because we don't have the nutrition. Forget all your ideas and your plans and all. You'll go a lot earlier than you expect.
And GJ speaks of that all the time, especially by getting in the best shape of his life. He was out of shape, and his book soon will be coming out about his story. Because, George, what he was able to do was he challenged Dale Brown to see how many consecutive days he could work out. And he was the only person ever to beat Coach Brown. How many days did you work out? Have you worked out consecutively, GJ?
Well, I worked out exactly 610 straight days. We did 2 miles a day, and then I gave myself a day off. I still did the 2 miles, and I still do 2 miles every single day, and I just went over 750-some days and counting, and my goal is to get to 1,000, and then when I get to 1,000, then I'll reevaluate what the next goal is, and so I just keep chugging away, and I just know the day that I quit doing it that I can easily fall back and, you know, just stay in the course. And a lot of what your message has been today is, you know, definitely stay in the course. And when you have challenges, get up and learn from what you're able to learn and move forward. And you're a true testament of that. And I'm motivated to go get my 2 miles done. As soon as we hang up and this interview, I'm going to go do my 2 miles.
Well, you know, it's strange, but everybody says, well, I can't work out. I've got the time. You don't have to work out all day. You just have to work out every day.
Absolutely.
You don't have to, and you know, I know people overdo it, and you can see it in their faces. I mean, they're overdone it, so the body's just robbed all this nutrition from them because you see a lot of women that you spend most of the days on treadmills and stuff, and it's not all that great for them. It's a question of balance in your life. What do you do, TJ, in your program? I mean, obviously working here, your brain's using power and calories to do, but what do you do to regenerate? I know that you'll get endorphins from your running and feeling good on that, but what do you really know that when you get feeling sort of run down, what do you do?
Well, I'd say there's three aspects to what I do. One is obviously exercise, and I exercise, you know, definitely 30 minutes to an hour, and usually it's an hour. And one of the things I found out, you know, I'm 52 years old. I say I'm 32 because I feel like I'm 32. And I'm on a sprinting program, and I actually train like athletes, and it's like who would ever thought, and I never would have thought. And my body just really likes it, and it's in a good environment where it's not hard on my knees or ankles. And then I actually have a health and wellness company. We have a 90-day health challenge, and we've got some great products, and I use those products. I've changed my diet over time to a very good diet, and everything you said about where our food is and where it is and where it isn't, it's exactly right. So I've modified my own personal diet. And then also, you know, I listen to my body, and I know when I need to rest, and I know rest and recharge is important to, you know, operate at a high performance level. And so those are the.
Well, I think you made a great point there, in the sprinting. I think people thought for a long time that endurance was the way to go, and you can see a lot of people who are long distance runners. They don't have much muscle tone. They're pretty can be pretty traumatized by their distance. The thing about it, when you sprint, you use maximum and then back off. Maximum, and that's what really exercise for the heart is about, is to get it so that in cases of problems, the heart can withstand it. And I think there's programs like Pace and all, these different programs which you sprint. And that's what I'm just getting into now at this point. I've had some injuries over the years. I'm 74. And so I ran on cement 5 miles a day every day, and that did not help me. My back got punished from it. My knee got punished. Then when I backed off of that and I started sprinting and doing all my vitamins and stretching. Stretching is so important. I think a lot of people think you, when you're young, you don't think about stretching. My generation didn't. But my God, when you get older and you, let's talk about inflammation. That's our biggest problem, is that inflammation is a precursor of, heart disease as well as, cancer. And the mixture of things that you eat, can cause, if you got old injuries, especially people who are warriors and have had a few injuries, you can get osteoarthritis when you get older. So you have to balance your diet to get off of those acidic things that create that environment of inflammation to continue on exercising, or you can't, or you just rust out and you can't exercise. So it's a tempering as you get older of keeping a certain program and at the same time rest. And that's where you get a few good gray hairs to tell you which to do and which don't to do. And then you take your macronutrients and your micronutrients. The micronutrients, the things that are missing in our soil, that's what is so important for people to understand. That's why I make the point of drinking youth infusion, because it's just a simple no-brainer. You put it in your water and you down it, and that's all you need. I used to take handfuls of pills, and I just thought, I can't take any more vitamin pills. It's starting to mess me up. The digestive stuff and the coatings and the binders on all that stuff. So I just have it now in a very simple form. I go out and I do my stretching as I get out of bed. I do an old time exercise. I don't know if you know ever heard of it. Old timers would know it. It was the Canadian exercise. Do you remember those? The Canadian Air Force exercises? Ever hear of them?
I'm not sure exactly what it is. I'm sure I've probably seen it. I'm not sure by name.
Well, it was an exercise they used, the Canadian Air Force used. It was 11 minutes. That was it. And you ran in place. You did squats. You did push-ups. You did all sorts of bends and to do it all in 11 minutes. Well, I thought nobody can do anything in 11 minutes. It didn't work. Well, you know what? I did it before I got out of bed. I mean, I just put my feet on the floor and I do it every day. It becomes a habit. So having to do that, I feel great because, as you know, you get that first shot of an endorphin, and that's the beginning of it.
Exactly.
That's like having if you don't have that, you mope around, and next thing you find yourself back in bed and then watching a TV show or something.
The minute
I have to go into the bathroom to take my shower, I do that before, and I feel great. Then I start realizing that everything I put in my body is going to make me feel good or bad today. And you know, just a anabolic and catabolic state of food. I'm sure you know what that is. The anabolic is the food you take in, and then you start the catabolic, you start to use it for your supply. Well, when you start to take it in, if it's good stuff or bad stuff, you feel okay. But if it starts to perform badly for you, then you get that sense of depression and fatigue. If you get the kind of food that I get, which I'm sure you do now, you have a sense of lightness about it, not heaviness, and your body's not telling you I'm hungry, because the more minerals you have, the less hungry you have.
Absolutely, George. Well, we are running out of time, but I got two questions for you. One, what we say on this on the Beach Lifestyle Radio Show is, what is your 90-day challenge? What do you want to accomplish in your life, either in your health, your business, in the next 90 days? And lastly, where we can find information on you? Those two questions.
Okay, well, it's interesting. I don't have a website. I have a website where I have my drink, youth, infusion, which is you can go to www.drink, like drink. I always use the word like drink youth infusion, and you can go to that site and you can see me. But my own personal site, I'm strange. I don't I find that Facebook and all those places I run from a little bit, because they kind of triangulate you and they know where you are all the time. So I don't really like that. I don't know if you guys like it, but I don't like it. I don't like to go somewhere and find out someone who knows I'm coming.
Well, I tell you, it was a blast, George. Love to have you back on, especially when you hear about the big announcement. And love to have you guys trade ideas to live, especially after 50, to be in the best shape of your lives, both of you, and continue to be so energetic. And I see 50-year-olds, George, that are GJ's age, that look like they're close to the grave. And you guys are a testament.
Right. Yeah.
You're
that's
a testament.
Right. I mean, you have to have a passion for everything, even what you put in your mouth and what you do in your life. The passion, and it's body, mind, and spirit. And you, if you just give in and acquiesce to all the problems and think, oh, my God, something bad's going to happen to me again today, you will get that. If, on the other hand, say, I don't know what's going to happen, but I will handle it.
Exactly.
Life will just part the ways for you.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for calling, George. We'll definitely have you back on, and best of luck.
Okay, now don't forget, drink youth infusion. Go to that, and you'll see that whole deal there, okay?
Okay. Thanks, George.
Thank you, George.
It's been a pleasure talking to you guys.
All right, take care now.
I'm here.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hope to see you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Beach Lifestyle Radio Show on the Simply G Radio Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Tutor Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network. TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and also SimplyG.com. And I'm really excited, finally, to have another Real Housewife back on the show. It's been a while, and I always get into the reality thing and have a lot of blasts. So I want to welcome the program former Real Housewife of Miami, Karen Sierra. Karen, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you, Neil, for inviting me. I'm happy to be a part of this great show.
Absolutely. And I've had a blast always with the Housewives and how you guys like to kick it back and different things. I've had Leah on a couple times, so I'm just excited to have another. So let's talk about the story. Now, did you always want to be in the entertainment field? A lot of people out there, you know, that end up being reality TV stars never thought they would ever be on television. Was that your dream when you were a child, to kind of be involved in that or not?
Well, I will tell you, since a very young age, around the age of 15, I started off doing competing in beauty pageants, local beauty pageants here in Miami. I was belonging to some modeling agencies, so I went to some castings. And I did, being that we live in South Florida, and I am a Hispanic woman, I did a lot of castings, and I was in some Spanish soap operas acting. And I did a lot of TV commercials in the Hispanic industry. And when it came around time to seeing this, you know, I figured what a great way to get myself known in the American market. So, yeah, ever since I was a little child, you know, I always wanted to be somehow in the entertainment industry, whether it was acting, hosting a TV show. I just never imagined it was going to be a reality show like The Housewives of Miami. But you never know the surprises that come your way.
Exactly, and then the surprises are very, very surprising in certain ways. But I guess being a trained actress and being involved in all these different things, when they first came to you with the idea of being on a reality show, I'm sure you were hesitant, because you've been in acting, you've been in all these different things. You're like, well, this is a little different. So, what was your response first of all when people asked you to do this?
I will tell you, my publicist came up to me and she goes, Karen, I have a great idea for you. She goes, they're casting for the Real Housewives of Miami. I'm like, what? I'm not going to lie to you. My first reaction was a shock, just because the whole connotation and the whole idea of these housewives are that they're crazy, you know, and it's so drama-filled, and there's just so much cattiness. And I was like, are you kidding me? You want me to be on the Housewives? She goes, Karen, you have to look at the big picture. When she explained to me that and I saw her reasoning behind it, she goes, people in the Hispanic market know who you are. You have your name established. In the American market, they don't know who Karen Sierra is. If this is what you want to continue pursuing besides being a dentist, this is the best way and the fastest way to get your name out there. And truth be told, that is exactly the truth. You know, whether you hate these shows or whether you love them, whether you're a fan or whether you're not a fan of these shows, Bravo TV has literally done this wonderful equation, a wonderful combination of having success on these shows. And it almost giving you instant stardom, instant recognition. So if you want to be able to pursue more of the acting field or more of the entertainment industry, it's the easiest and fastest way to get your name known. So once she was able to explain to me that part, I was like, okay, I see where you're going now. So unfortunately, it involves having to put up a little bit with the cabbiness, over excess drama to women, that have nothing else to do with their lives and just create fights. But I realized that it was a stepping stone and using it for a bigger purpose.
Well, Karen, and the thing is, when we talk about these opportunities, anytime we get the opportunity to get free publicity and paid publicity, we got to jump on it, because now the popularity of that show, you get recognized everywhere, and it opens so many doors in so many situations. We'll get to that later, but we want to go to the story first of all. You're the one that has on-air experience. You're the one that knows how to act. You get thrown into here at first when you meet the cast and everything. Do you have an advantage, you think, being on camera, because you know how to kind of take what you do on camera and off camera and be able to balance those things compared to other people that aren't used to that?
Well, I will tell you, as far as being comfortable in front of the camera, the cameras would follow me sometimes in my home, in my place of business, when we were out. I did not feel intimidated like some of the women felt initially, because the camera was staring at them, because I am used to being in front of the camera, and I consider myself very comfortable in front of the camera. But one thing is, when they hire you as an actress, they hire you as a TV host, you know what you're doing, or you know that you're acting, and if you need to be a witch, in other words, or something else, you're being contacted as that particular role, so you're able to act whichever way they're telling you to. Now, although reality TV is not 100% real, shall we say, the audience members, or a big percentage of the audience members that watch these reality TV shows, don't understand that. They perceive that what they're seeing is real. Even if you're acting in order to get better ratings for the show, or even if you're acting yes. because you just want to become more popular, that's the mentality of some of these reality stars, that the crazier they act, the more popular they're going to be. So when you're dealing with that, I did not want to portray being the fact that, yes, I'm an actress, but I also have another profession, being a dentist. So I wasn't about to lose my reputation of that I worked so hard for, being a dentist, of sweat, tears, study, many hours. I'm just acting crazy when the perception, as we all know, nine-tenths of reality is perception. So that's when you have to, and I realize that, and I think some of these women didn't realize that. Maybe that was my advantage
exactly.
towards them. Because I do realize that this is reality, and people are going to perceive you to be that person that is being projected on that show. So I wasn't about to start slapping someone or punching someone or throwing tables or acting crazy, because although some of it could be scripted by the women themselves, the audience members do not know that, and they're going to perceive that that's really you, and that's the person that, that you are, whether in front of the cameras or behind the cameras.
Well, Karen, here's the situation. I talked to Mary Ammons about this, and also Aviva Drescher, mm-hmm. and they both flat out told me, they said that they had media experience in certain ways, Aviva with Fran, and also Mary Ammons with her grandfather, and she understood that she's not going to ruin her brand by doing this. She's going to try to increase her brand, but she's not going to make a fool of herself like a lot of them end up making fools of themselves. So you came in and said, I can't, so that no one's going to ever want to have clients for my dental business, that'll be gone. I can't do that. The reality TV is not going to pay me forever. So you had a game plan. A lot of these other women, they had no game plan at all. They literally are saying, this is their 15 minutes of fame. Usually maybe their husband's famous, or they had a famous family member, or were born into money in certain aspects. And yet they just thrive off of being a star. You've already been a star, so you have an advantage. And I think that ultimately that leads to when you finally made the decision. But I want to get to the story, and I don't know if you thought I was going to find out more, because, I just started watching the Real Housewives. I'm a Jersey fan, but then once I had Mary on, and I've had New York, and I'm starting to watch it more. So I had no idea till Leah came on my show twice to really understand about Miami. So tell us specifically through these experiences, it kind of hurts you as well, because there's a lot more cattiness because you were already known as somebody. You had that professionalism, and some of these women didn't have that professionalism, did they?
That's correct. And then, for example, one of the storylines on one of the couple of the episodes, you know, during season two that I was on, some of the things were the fact that they wanted to bring up the fact of, oh, you have a publicist, you're a dentist with a publicist? Yes. You know, and I started explaining to him, well, you know, and I understand their reasoning. They just wanted to try at all costs to kind of make you look bad. So she was like, oh, a dentist with a publicist? I don't get that. That's so ridiculous. And I'm like, well, Alexia, I'm trying to explain to you, I'm not just a dentist, I'm also an actress. I just, oh, so now you're an actress. And they tried to belittle you and say or do anything to make you look bad. And I'm like, well, so besides doing a lot of TV shows, I'm also the national Colgate spokesperson. She was, oh, if you're a Colgate person, no, you're not, Karen. You come out in the background. And I'm like, and they sound so ignorant, because if they get their facts straight before they speak, they wouldn't sound so stupid.
Exactly.
They don't have a 3-year contract with Colgate toothpaste. And I can show you the contract. I am a national Hispanic spokesperson, so it just made it look even more ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because as much as she wanted to make me look bad for having a publicist, I had the proof, you know, to show them. So it's like they just try to demean you and they try
exactly.
to put you down.
But you got to blame. But you got to also blame the producers. Honestly, they look at these storylines, they read these things up, and they see that, you know, you're a beautiful woman, and some of them are really, you know, fake in certain aspects, and that you're a career woman, you're not being supported by a husband. Again, I'm making these shots, not you, so don't worry about that. And when it comes out on the, especially I'll be tweeting out a lot of my reality fans that are cool with Mary and all that stuff and stuff. But Karen, it's a situation where they connive, they contrive and say, this is who I want you to attack. You're the one that, you know, is more confident about yourself. So why don't we gang up on her? So when this occurred, did you feel like you were blindsided in season two?
Definitely. 100%. I did not understand where some of these women, I'm not going to say all, because Lisa Hochstein, Joanna Krupp, and Leah Black were wonderful.
I'm glad you didn't knock Leah, because I love Leah. So, okay.
I love Leah. You know what? And I'm very honest with her. She knows how I feel about her. At the beginning, I did not like her. I think a lot of audience members don't understand her personality. She just has an interesting sense of humor. Like, she plays around. And at the beginning, I did not understand that, you know? And I truly believe, like, with Leah Black in particular, to know her is to love her. You have to really know her. You can't judge her by what you see on the show. She truly has an amazing heart, and I really consider her a friend right now. But the other women, and you have to understand this, and I'll be happy to say it, and I stand by what I mean, you know, I stand by what I say, is that some of these women, not all of them, even though some of them are married for that, but some of these women have nothing to do with their lives. They're married to a millionaire. Some of them are given these professions so that they look professional on a show, but they're given these titles of having a job, supposedly, of being an editor-in-chief of a magazine, when they were never were, but they wanted on the show to look like if they were important. And so they're bored with their lives. So if the producers or themselves start planning up a theme of, let's try to make this film look bad, that's the only entertainment in their lives. So they try to do and say anything to try to make this other person look bad. The only thing is that they didn't take into account that the audience, it's the audience, is not dumb.
No.
And although they might believe them for one or two episodes, but when they're seeing the same routine behavior going on and on, they're like, wait a second. You know? And they're not dumb. After a while, the audience gets it. And I think that is something that has played a bit new towards the beginning of the episode. People didn't understand me. You know, I was always smiling, this and that, and they were criticizing it. So
right.
audience members were siding with them, And after they're like, wait a second, you're criticizing Karen because she smiles too much? I mean, seriously, if that's the worst thing you have, then I'm not doing too bad.
Right.
And it's that whole idea of killing them with kindness. I'm not going to give them the satisfaction that if they're accusing or saying things that are untrue, why would I justify, you know, those lies by giving them more time of day? I ignore it. I just smile it off and move on with my life and worry about the things that are important in life.
Exactly.
Not, obvious lies.
All right, when we get back, more Karen Sierra, former Real Housewives of Miami. And, you know, it's kind of funny when I started reading up on this because I didn't know. I said, man, I guess you're cool because you're letting me really get the dirt on this deal, and I'll shoot out whoever is out there, has no life. Honestly, you know what? We find out, Karen, what some of these people are getting paid, especially when it came out, especially with the jerseys, I laugh. I said, You're ruining your entire life just to get your 15 minutes of fame and throwing yourself out there when they're not paying you what, let's say, Duck Dynasty's getting paid. So when we get back, more Karen Sierra, you're listening to the Total Tutor Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Tutor Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network. Again, you can go to simplyg.com, but you also go for my website, totaltutor.net, Twitter, Total Tutor Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and I'm with Karen Sierra, former Real Housewives of Miami, and I find out I can ask any question. We're kind of getting into this, but I wanted to talk about when these women are ruined their whole reputations, is it really worth it? And I talked about off-air about specifically like reality shows like Duck Dynasty going ahead and Duck Dynasty getting like $100,000 an episode. Or remember John and Kate Plus 8 making an absolute mint, Kate. I mean, it was ridiculous. But then I hear about something, people don't believe me, the one from the Real Housewives of New Jersey, and Teresa, she was only getting, they were saying something crazy like her monthly salary is $3,000. And I'm like, are you serious? And they're getting ratings galore. Is it true they're really not getting paid that much compared to, let's say, someone like on TLC or on Discovery or things like that?
I will tell you one thing. It all depends on how many seasons that the specific reality show has been on and how well their ratings are. My understanding is the girls from Atlanta get paid pretty well. I will tell you, as far as, you know, us being from Miami, we got paid less than six figures. So you can estimate there. And, you know, once again, it goes back to the fact that although I may be an actress, you know, if you're going to hire me as a reality star, you're going to have to add a couple more zeros to my paycheck if you want to make, you know, want me to slap someone or make a fool of myself on national TV. They are not paying me way nearly enough money for me to want to ruin my reputation as a woman, as a professional, as a friend, for that amount, you know, written on that paycheck. Maybe if you have three or four more zeros, we can talk.
So here's the funny thing about that, and I agree, Karen, it's a way to kind of bring back your, but other reality companies. I wonder if Bravo consults with the WWE, because I was a former professional wrestler, and they don't pay them hardly anything unless they're the big stars. So people want their 15 minutes of fame, and you put me on there, and I'm a star, and then all my friends will scuttle, but I can't believe I saw you on TV, and then you can take pictures with people everywhere you go. Karen, you're used to that. You're used to being a star, and you're used to in the Latina market. So why you weren't striving? You weren't. So they were willing to take you down any way they could, destroy you any way they wanted to, basically so that they could become the star. And that's pretty much what it was.
Correct. Absolutely correct. There's no argument in that comment that you just made. And you know what? It's, remember, all these stations, whether it's Bravo or another station, you know, or another studio, they're there to make money.
Yes.
And reality stars, some of them are smart enough that they're there to promote a business. They're there to promote a product. They're there to promote a brand. And then there's the other ones that don't care. They want their 15 minutes of fame because chances are their husband isn't paying attention to them. Maybe their husband has a mistress. Who knows what their storyline is. But they're bored with their lives and they'll do anything for any amount of paycheck. So it's almost like easy prostitution, you know? They just want to be famous, and they don't care how much they're getting paid for it.
Absolutely.
And that's what's sad.
It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And they're taking advantage in certain ways, in my opinion. I really believe that in my own heart they are doing those things. So I guess then you just had enough of it. You said, my gosh, they're attacking me, and this is not worth my money. I got my opportunity. I got my exposed to different market. Now I'm finally in the U.S., really known, not just in the Latino market, so I can kind of create new brands and start again. So life after The Real Housewives, once you made the decision to leave, when the show's, you know, it's reaching its peak, people are looking at you probably saying, are you crazy, Karen? You're leaving? Right?
Well, I'll tell you, it was the same discussion that I had with my publicist when she first came up to me, deciding, say, let's cast for this, let's try this out. You know, I had the same mentality all season long, even when I was filming. This is a stepping stone. I don't want to get labeled as a housewife, because also being an actress, if you're labeled as a housewife, and the only thing that they will know you for is for the time you were a housewife, then it's much harder to be able to cast for shows, for films, for different opportunities in the TV market, because they just see you as a housewife. So that being said, the fact of, and I knew it was only the news of the second, number one, that I wanted to get my name known in the American market, and that I was achieved only with one season, two, and that three, I just didn't want to deal with so much cattiness. It was the best decision to leave after one season, to be honest with you.
So what happened once you made the decision to leave the show? What's going on with Karen now?
Well, I've been flying back and forth from Miami to LA, and I've been guest hosting on The Doctors. The Doctors is a national syndicated show, if you've ever seen it.
Yes, I love The Doctors, Karen. Yeah.
Oh, it's a great show. And actually, Dr. Travis Dorick, before he was on The Doctors, he was a reality star. Also, he was on The Bachelor. He was the Bachelor. I want to say maybe 5 or 6 seasons ago. And so he made it big doing that. And so they've been having me guest host. I've gone around 8 different times to guest host, and that is wonderful. I mean, as you can imagine, as an actress and somebody that's been in this TV industry for so long, arriving into Paramount Studios to actually work is a dream come true, I think, for any actress. So that's been lots of fun. I've been going back and forth there. And actually casting for a Spanish soap opera here that will be filmed in Telemundo, which is a Spanish TV station here in the U.S. So I've been casting for that, and just listening to different people that have contacted me, approaching me to hopefully do some projects with me. And so just trying to hear them out and see what they have to offer and see if it's worth my time or not. So just trying to evaluate everything else.
So you feel that the experience in The Real Housewives of Miami has led to opportunities. That's what it sounds like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? I think you can never live your life with regrets. I do not regret being on The Housewives. I actually, believe it or not, I know it's a little sadistic for me, but I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I went through this whole experience, because number one, I made some amazing friendships. I can truly say that Joanna has become one of my best friends. I adore Lisa to death and Leah. And, you know, besides the friendships, it's the communication, the context that I was able to make through there. And like I said, it's thanks to the housewives that the executive producer of The Bosses realized who I was. And she says, oh my God, I want her. She's a doctor. I want her on my show. So, you know, literally there's no regrets. Although I had some tears that were shed and some frustrating moments, definitely never regretted being on the show.
Well, absolutely. And where do you see yourself? Where do you see your career? I mean, especially still, you are a dentist. Where do you see yourself? Like, do you see yourself kind of having these dual existences where you're an actress and a brand and also a dentist? Where do you see?
Absolutely. I have my own practice, and I've had it for over 2 years. I never work 5 days a week as a dentist anyway. I normally average either 2 to 3 days a week. And the good thing is, being that you own your own practice, you have the flexibility of choosing when you want to work and delegating some jobs and being able to do other things. So I definitely see myself, you know, and I love the fact of having 2 very opposite professions. One keeps you balanced with your feet on the ground, you know, and it's a very stable job. And then the other one is the full entertainment industry where you can, you know, have fun and do something out of the ordinary. So if I can balance both careers, and God willing, I can still, you know, whether it's TV, film, anything that comes my way in the entertainment industry, I will be more than happy to balance both professions out.
Well, it sounds like it, and you're a very busy person with the many different things. How does your how does your clients feel of you being an actress and being former Real Housewife? How do they feel, especially with you with your practice and everything? What do they get a kick out of it, or they?
You know what? It's actually kind of cute. It's kind of like, you know, how you have these proud, you know, parents. My parents are so proud of all my accomplishments and all. My patients kind of become like my proud parents also. You know, they're actually so overjoyed, and they love bragging about that their dentist is this and their dentist is that. So I would say 100% of my patients are very happy about it. They're, you know, they love telling them, oh, yeah, my dentist is a housewife and my dentist is this and that. So it's actually very cute. They're very supportive. They're very understanding.